Because it's situated on the river, Chelsea has become really a village of palaces. And it's really the arrival of Sir Thomas More, who was the right-hand man to King Henry VIII, who lived in Chelsea and started to attract people, including the king, it has to be said, in the 1500s. Because the river, if you think about it, was a medieval motorway. And it was a very convenient stopping off point for wealthy people travelling up and down the river. So grand houses start to be built on the riverside. But in time, particularly in the 19th century, it becomes home to really artists and writers. And it becomes a very fashionable bohemian village. And you get the likes of Oscar Wilde and John Singer Sargent and Turner, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, and actors like Laurence Olivier and even architects, some of whom laid at some of the streets, as we'll discover. And then we get into the 20th century, and then really the King's Road becomes the centre of fashion, with Mary Quant's Bazaar opening up in 1955. It becomes home to swinging London in the 1960s. The Rolling Stones are here, David Bowie's here. In the 1980s, we get a whole bunch of people hanging around Sloane Square, living in and around Sloane Street, and they're known as the Sloane Rangers. And even Diana Spencer, the future Princess Diana, will have a flat share just off of the King's Road in the late 1970s before she marries Prince Charles. So that's just a little flavour of Chelsea. And of course, you know, wonderful shopping, wonderful places to eat. Let's head now to where we would start our tour. So we'd actually start outside the entrance to this underground station, which is Sloane Square. And one thing to notice as you're arriving by tube train is that if you look just up the back there, you can see there's a bridge that spans the underground lines. And that's actually a conduit. And that conduit carries one of the lost waterways of London, and that's the Westbourne River. And for those of you that have done David's Hampstead tour, you may well know that it originates right up in Hampstead by the White Horse Pond and makes its way down sort of in a southwesterly direction via Hyde Park and running through here at Sloane Square Underground Station and continuing onwards. So one of the great lost rivers of London. But we now have a rather tragic story to tell. And the story concerns this man. And this man is Peter Llewelyn Davis. And Peter Llewelyn Davis was one of five boys pictured here on the right-hand side, pictured with their father, Arthur Llewelyn Davis, and their mother was Sylvia Llewelyn Davis. And the four brothers there are George, Jack, Michael, and Nicholas. Now, both the parents died, and all the boys were adopted by a man called J.M. Barrie. And Peter and his brothers become the inspiration for Peter Pan and the Lost Boys in the novel of the same name by J.M. Barrie. And their whole life story was tinged with tragedy, because in the First World War, George was killed in the trenches. Michael, who was the fourth eldest child, drowned in the 1920s, possibly in what we think may now be a suicide pact, against the background of the love that dare not speak its name, the same love that brought Oscar Wilde down in the 1890s. And as regards to Peter on the left-hand side, Peter was a signal officer in France, very brave man, won the Military Cross, but was really scarred by his wartime experience. And although he did go on to have quite a successful career as a publisher, he discovered that his wife and his three children had an incurable disease. And all his life, he said, "I can never escape Peter Pan." And he described it as that terrible masterpiece. And on the 5th of April, 1960, Peter Llewelyn Davis jumped onto the tracks at Sloane Square Underground Station and was killed by a tube train. And the verdict was, of course, suicide. So a rather tragic story to start with, but we're going to uplift that by telling you about another writer and a man who was passionate about architecture, a man called John Betjeman. John Betjeman lived in Chelsea in the 1950s and 1960s, and he regularly took the tube from Sloane Square Station into the West End, and he often travelled with a teddy bear, and he would talk to it while he was on the train, and he would actually say to the bear that everyone's looking at you, Archie, and his name was John Betjeman. And this story inspires a man called Evelyn Waugh to create Sebastian and his teddy Aloysius in Brideshead Revisited. So actually, Betjeman, in fact, as a child lived in Chelsea, so actually we're talking back in the 1920s. But Evelyn Waugh was inspired by this story of John Betjeman. Now, if we step outside, we go to the right and we see this building, and this is the Royal Court Theatre, housed in this beautiful Italian Renaissance building and opened in 1888. And it is undoubtedly one of the most important theatres in the history of the British theatre. In the 1920s, we get the premieres of some of George Bernard Shaw's plays, including Joan and Heartbreak House. And of course, these are plays that are written with socialist ideals in mind. And Bernard Shaw, of course, was famously a brilliant, grumpy, but very witty man. And he was asked once at a party, "Are you enjoying yourself, George?" And Shaw said, "Well, there's no one else to enjoy." And unusually, in 1935, the theatre became a cinema, was, in fact, bombed, although not completely, in World War II. And then, after the Second World War, in 1956, it was here that the revolution in English theatre began, because the English Stage Company took up residence here, and their plan, as you see here in the poster, was to put on plays, radical new plays, that were designed to really shock the post-war London audience. And this play, Look Back in Anger, was premiered in 1956, written by John Osborne. And the publicist at the Royal Court Theatre described Osborne as an angry young man. Now, that name stuck, and this name would then apply to a whole group of writers, including people like Arnold Wesker and Harold Pinter and Kingsley Amis in the 1950s and 1960s. And they were really writing plays reacting against post-war life and using working-class social realism to really go against all the plays that had been written before the war, particularly those lovely sort of middle-class drawing-room comedies by Noel Coward, people swanning around in smoking jackets and drinking cocktails. Not really what most people could identify with in the post-war period. And these plays were known as kitchen sink dramas, because you have people, horror of horrors, with northern working-class accents with their hands in the kitchen sink. But it completely changed the way that we saw theatre forever. And in fact, the English Stage Company still exists today at the Royal Court Theatre. And today, as it has always been, it's a showcase for new writing. And Edward Bond had plays there in the 1970s, very controversial, very violent plays. A play called Save became very famous because it had a group of young boys who stone a baby to death in its pram. And on a lighter note, in 1973, this show premieres at the Royal Court, and it's there on the right-hand side. It was written by an out-of-work actor who was wanting to keep himself busy in the winter months, and he was very particularly obsessed with the B-movies of the sort of 1930s, 1940s, 1950s in America, and he creates the Rocky Horror Show. And, of course, it goes on to become a great cult musical, and the writer, Richard O'Brien, the out-of-work actor that created it, also went on to star in it. And an actor called Tim Curry played the extraordinary role of Dr. Frankenfurter, who was a transvestite scientist. And it really was, at a time, you know, quite progressive and quite ahead of its time, because it was dealing with lots of issues about gender fluidity, which, of course, now is very much part of the norm. But it was pretty groundbreaking at the time. So let's head from Sloane Square and Sloane Square Underground Station to meet the person that gave the area its name. So what we can see there is that lovely sort of rotunda building. That's a lovely new restaurant cafe that's just opened on the King's Road. Now, the King's Road is the main road that leads from Sloane Square westwards. And in fact, it was laid out by King Charles II, so he could travel out to Hampton Court. And up until the 19th century, the King's Road was a private toll road, and you had to pay tokens to, or had to provide tokens in order to be able to travel along it. So this little rotunda is just off the, so we're sort of on the King's Road. And I was there the other day, and lots of people sitting outside, of course, enjoying the sunshine. But the statue on the left-hand side is located just behind the wall, behind the rotunda. And that's a statue of Sir Hans Sloane. And Sir Hans Sloane has the station named after him, he has the square named after him, and he has a street named after him, stretching all the way from Sloane Square to Knightsbridge. Now, Hans Sloane, many of you will know who Sloane was. He was a royal doctor. In the late 1600s, he got a degree at the University of Orange in 1653. He became a property developer. And what he did is he purchased what had formerly been the Manor of Chelsea, which had been held by King Henry VIII in the 1500s. And he really starts to develop it. In fact, what he'd done is he'd, early in his career in the 1680s, he'd travelled out to Jamaica. He'd actually been the personal physician to the Duke of Albemarle. And when he went out to Jamaica, he collected lots of exotic plants. And being a doctor, of course, he was very interested in the medicinal properties of these herbs and plants. The reason that he was able to travel and do things independently was largely because he married a lady called Elizabeth Langley Rose. And rather controversially now, she was an heiress to sugar plantations in Jamaica. So actually, slavery contributed quite a lot to his fortune and his ability to do what he goes on to do, which is not just collect plants from Jamaica, but he actually collected just about everything that wasn't nailed down. He amassed a collection of cultural and natural artifacts. And when, just before he died in 1753, he bequeathed this collection of items, 71,000 of them, mind you, to the nation. And this formed the nucleus of the British Museum, which was founded in 1753 and opened its doors in 1759. And as I said, he bought the Manor of Chelsea and he became the Lord of the Manor. When he died, he had two daughters and he left his Chelsea property, which consisted of 100 acres, to his eldest daughter, Elizabeth. She went on to marry a soldier called Lord Charles Cadogan. And at that time, of course, the man marries the woman, the man inherits the woman's land. So Cadogan inherits the Manor of Chelsea. And still today, astonishingly, the descendants of Cadogan still own about 90 acres of Chelsea. So the Cadogan family are the landowners. And Lord Cadogan can walk from Sloane Square all the way up to Knightsbridge and never leave his own pavement. He's been responsible for developing this sort of this lovely area here. And there's a nice shopping centre just off to the left called the Duke of York Square. So that's all been developed in the last sort of 10, 12 years or so. So, and there are big discussions at the moment about what we do with statues of people like Hans Sloane, of course. Do we take him down because of his links to the slave trade? Well, that's all up for discussion. But Sloane is, without Sloane, Chelsea would look quite different perhaps today. We're going to go a little bit further down the King's Road. We're going to turn left onto this beautiful avenue, which is known as Royal Avenue. Now, why is it royal? Well, I've put an image of the plaque there. It was actually laid out in 1692 to 1694, by King William III and Queen Mary II. Now, they had recently moved, not too far away, to Kensington Palace, to the north of Chelsea. Queen Mary was quite keen on visiting the old soldiers that were housed at the Royal Hospital, Chelsea. And you can just see there, at the bottom of the avenue, the facade of the Royal Hospital, Chelsea. More about that in a moment. This was a hospital built for old soldiers. Christopher Wren, the go-to architect of the age, said, if you want to visit the old soldiers, I'll build you a royal carriageway all the way from Kensington Palace, and it'll go all the way down to the Royal Hospital, Chelsea. So the idea was it was going to be this sort of lovely, triumphal, processional way. However, local residents started to object. They didn't want a carriageway going through their land to the north, and so it was abandoned. So now this is a very short Royal Avenue that stretches from the Royal Hospital up to the King's Road, but the name has still stuck. And I just wanted to show you this lovely painting from 1900 of Royal Avenue, Chelsea, seen from the King's Road, looking down towards the Royal Hospital. You can see it hasn't really changed much, although that was painted in the winter time, by the looks of it, because there are no leaves on the lovely plane trees. But Royal Avenue is lined with beautiful early 19th century Regency townhouses. And this is one of them. This is the exterior of number four. And number four is what we might call a downtown address, because it's here that the legendary pop singer Petula Clark lived in the 1980s, in fact. She had, of course, a massive hit in the 1960s with Downtown, and that really has become her signature tune. But although she moved out, she really missed it, and she, in fact, always kept an eye on it after she moved out, and even asked the new owners in the early 2000s if she could have a look round. But she wasn't the first famous resident of the street, because Royal Avenue is also, we believe, the fictional home of the world's most famous secret agent, James Bond. Number 30, Royal Avenue, is the address, although it is slightly disputed with another square in Chelsea, the address that he gave for James Bond in Casino Royale, Ian Fleming. He just says that Bond lives in a comfortable ground floor flat in a converted Regency townhouse in a square off the King's Road. And he tells us that Bond's 1930 4-litre supercharged Bentley coupe was parked under the plane trees in Royal Avenue.